Okay, so I guess you will hear better. And Toronto is a great city, and Canada is a great country, and I'm very interested in commodities, so consequently I'm very happy to be in Canada. So my talk yesterday in Tom's University, McMaster, was very mathematically oriented with stochastic time changes and transaction time and pure jump levy processes and so on. This afternoon it will be different, but without any presumption from my viewpoint at the present time, at least as important, or if not more. And the mathematics will be kept at a very low level, even though there are plenty of mathematical issues behind. And I started being interested in commodities a long time ago, by today's standards at least, like in 1995. I was doing Asian options at the time, and basically in the world of commodities, options are essentially Asian options. So I started with the oil market. Then in my second country called the US, we got deregulation of electricity markets. I've been working with a friend of mine who is now head of commodities at Morgan Stanley. We were in Atlanta building the trading desk of a major utility in the region. And when you do electricity, you need to look at natural gas. And when you do natural gas, you need to look at crude oil. And when you look at crude oil, you got a bunch of commodities. You look at coal, you look at uranium. And then eventually you look at soft commodities and you look at the whole picture. So basically what I'm trying to present here is more or less, whatever, two or three papers, but the role of inventory when looking at commodities, and in particular when looking at spot price volatility, which matters if you decide to invest in commodities or if you decide to sell options, return on commodities, and so on and so forth, and the role of inventory in explaining the forward curve, which is the key tool. When you work in a bank in fixed income, every morning you come and you build the yield curve, the treasury yield curve for default-free instruments, and then you incorporate the credit risk the way you want. When you work on commodities, you need to work on forward curves. And I have been for more than 2 years on the board of the UBS Bloomberg Commodity Index, which is more looking at investing in commodities, but in plenty of activities related to commodities, if not all of them, you need to look at this fundamental instrument and whatever elements you can provide around the features of the forward curve. Okay, so first to get a rough feeling of the situation, you are in 1991 and you own $100 million and you give me your $100 million and I have a passive strategy following one of two major indexes called the Goldman Sachs Commodity Index or the Dow Jones AIG Commodity Index. AIG does not have a great name these days, but insurance companies have been interested in commodities for obvious reasons, in particular inflation hedge, for a long time. So in any case, you start with what your $100 million and you end your period of 9 years with a compound return, which is in one case less than 20%, in the second case less than 40%. And if you remember, this time period was the technology bubble in the stock market and so on. So we understand why during that time period commodities were not very attractive on one hand, and we understand why as far as financial modeling is concerned, we had some papers in the early 90s proposing to model the commodity price as a geometric Brownian motion. Then we decided that mean reversion was more appropriate in order to account for this kind of trajectory. Okay, and obviously, so we are today in 2009, and the issue will be posed, if I forget about jumps, if I forget about pure jumps, if I remain in the domain of diffusions, obviously a key statement I need to make for myself is today, should I represent my commodity price as a geometric Brownian motion when I sell you a call option, or should I represent it as a mean reverting process? Obviously, the payoff, ST minus the strike, will be very different in both cases, hence the price quote I will provide in your direction will be very different. Same thing for value at risk activity. I worked for a company called EDF Trading in London, and basically we were looking in particular at electricity. And the value at risk exercise is very specific and very much related to this kind of statement about the behavior of the price trajectory. So in any case, we are now looking at, you know, in order to have a comparison, my time period is exactly twice shorter now. I start with my $100 million or my $100, and now my return after 4.5 years is 90%. Any hedge fund would be very happy to post a return of 90% over a 4.5 years period. And we understand why suddenly a number of new players decided to be interested in commodities. Okay, so that's what we have for the time period. Then I push my time period 2 years later, and I look at the sub-index called Dow Jones AIG Energy. And now I start with 100, and I end up in the neighborhood of 300 over, again, a 4.5 years time period. And there was a paper of mine written in the Journal of Alternative Investments, which was reproduced not under my name by software companies, but in any case, the name, was, so you don't have the time to sue them, so you just let it go. But in any case, the question I was posing, so we started the early 90s in the spirit of Black-Scholes, the commodity price should be a geometric Brown gun motion. Then we said, no, it's not right. In the mid-90s, a number of us proposed mean reversion as a feature characterizing commodity prices. And now, 10 years later, I say, maybe mean reversion is dead. When I talk to my friends at the university, Pierre and Marie Curie in the lab of probability, this could be a perfect trajectory of a geometric Brown gun motion. So now we are today in April 09, and we need to decide what we want as far as modeling trajectories is concerned. And indeed, now, okay, so that's the continuation of the story over a shorter time period and this gigantic collapse. So we went up and up until July 08, which is amazing because we were already 1 year into the subprime crisis. The commodity market was ignoring that. The oil prices were going to the roof, and then suddenly we had a gigantic collapse. But if you read the newspapers or if you do commodities, you know that we've got a small rebound lately, not that small, in particular in China and so on. Okay, so that's the picture we have as far as the Dow Jones AIG is concerned. And this is the index we use in the US to represent inflation, the Commodity Research Bureau. And as you see, the price trajectory is not identical, but fairly similar in terms of the fundamental properties we want to exhibit. Okay. So looking in particular, so people talk about commodities, but should remember that in fact we have at least three subclasses called agriculturals, metals, and energy. So on this slide, I try to make the point that indeed, as far as energy commodities are concerned, they do represent what we may want to call an asset class. Okay, and looking at the, there are many sources of information about energy. In particular, this is the U.S. Department of Energy. And regarding the world, these are the numbers. So basically, coal is first, hydro is next, after natural gas. Natural gas is second. Hydro is third. We are in France, we are in Canada. Hydro plays a key role. Nuclear electricity, obviously you read every day that some new country has decided to go for it, or another country like Germany, the Greens have banned the nuclear electricity for now, and oil comes in the last place. But what is very interesting, if you are managing a portfolio of energy mines or energy futures contracts and so on, is to see the changes in correlation. So for instance, here I take coal, which is a fairly dead commodity, and the correlation between coal and uranium, which is certainly a very lively commodity, went from 39% in the 90s to 83% during that first piece of the current decade, with natural gas to 79%. It was amazing that it was that low in the 90s, and with crude oil to 91%. So what is my message? My message is that even though I am only focusing on crude oil, I may want to follow all the others in order to get information and a better representation of what may happen in the very commodity I am interested. So we want to look at all kinds of features, and storage already appears in the picture. Here I am looking at the WTI, which is traded on the NYMEX, and the Brent crude oil, which is traded on the ICE. And historically, WTI prices have been above the Brent prices. Okay, so the so-called blue line, the Brent, is below the purple line, the WTI. But lately, we've got exactly the different situation, and obviously, when you play the commodity world, you do want to look at crude oil in the form of Brent as well as WTI. And here, recently, we've got a very large amount of stocks in the U.S., so much inventory that no new inventory is feasible, hence WTI prices went down, and the spread, a key quantity that you trade, and options on spreads as well. So the spread between WTI and Brent went the other way around. So what is my point? My point again is that this inventory quantity is a key economic indicator for all kinds of positions I may want to hold in the pure spot price or in any kind of other derivative. Okay, I have been doing a lot of work on the numeraire and numeraire changes in pricing all kinds of complex options. So here my point is more of an economic view, namely that when we mention commodity prices that are denominated in US dollars, still as of today, OPEC members off and on have been suggesting the possibility of switching either to the euro or to a basket of currencies or to the arithmetic average of the dollar and the euro. But still, we are there. And I am saying that in any case, we want to focus on this numeraire issue, because if I am in charge for Exxon, let's say a major oil company, if I am in charge of the book of energy positions, all of them, coal, natural gas, and so on, I may decide for a while to forget that I have many currencies on my balance sheet. The Canadian dollars, the currencies related to South America, Europe, and so on. I'm going to take my barrel of oil as my numeraire, and I will use all the other energy commodities as represented with respect to this numeraire. I do my job in terms of portfolio optimization and so on and so forth, and only at the end will I return to the various currencies, and I'm saving plenty of time on transaction fees and so on and so forth. And lastly, gold obviously has been for a number of years before the Bretton Woods Agreement playing the role of reference currency. And as you have been reading in the financial journals lately, gold is returning to this role. And we shall see what happens. Okay, so a fourth piece of the commodity world, besides ags, metals, and energy, is shipping. Basically, the world is indeed a unique place. We are looking at the world, we are here, and we are looking at the commodity price, and we are looking at another point. If the price difference here is larger than the cost of getting a vessel, I just go for it, and I send my commodity from point A to point B. So basically today, you can't really do commodities if you don't want to look at shipping and freight. And when you look at shipping and freight, you need to recognize that we have dry and wet, and we have some exchange possibility here, some physical optionalities that we have all over the place in the commodity world. So if you like to price options, there are many optionalities which appear in many activities, as you know, related to the commodity world. Okay, so who are the players in the world of shipping and freight? The old players in commodities like Cargill, Dreyfus, and others. The oil companies and the banks which have been looking at commodities for a long time, such as Goldman, Morgan Stanley, and Deutsche Bank. So you can go to the spot market, go to Rotterdam tomorrow morning and get a vessel, or you can go into a forward contract. And in fact, a number of hedge funds have been built lately, totally related to the shipping activity. Okay, and unsurprisingly, we have a number of places around the world, South America, North America, New York, Oslo, London, Athens, and so on, where the shipping activity is going to be located. Regarding the price trajectories, as we shall see, we have a very large volatility, and we have spikes going up very high, like 9,000 in January 2005, going down very rapidly by -300%. So these price trajectories do resemble the ones we have in the commodity, in the electricity world, and so does the volatility. So whatever expertise you got looking at the world of electricity, it may help you looking at whatever optimal portfolio you may want to build in the world of shipping. So this is the key index, the BDI, the one you find in the standard newspapers. And as you see, we started at around 1,000. It was a nominal value. This is measured in points. And we started at around 1,000 in 2001. The absolute maximum was around 12,000. Then we completely collapsed. Last December, we were at 600, not even the cost of the bunker that you need to put in your vessel, and we've gone up lately, up, you know, by +400%. So again, we have a gigantic volatility and very nice opportunities if we are able to have some prior view on this market. So I am mentioning that here, this very large volatility, the jumps in the behavior of the BDI. And at the time, the BDI was totally collapsed. If you need some extra oil storage, you can use some vessels which are not used in order to put your oil storage. And I will come back to that, hopefully, if I have time, in order to see why today oil storage may be valuable. So I'm going to move, and you can absolutely stop me at any moment if you have questions to pose. So in any case, looking at the commodity spot price and forward market, like in the world of currencies, we have looked at the cash and carry relationship, namely that at date little t, your forward contract for maturity capital T has, under the assumption of no arbitrage, a relationship to the spot price, which is expressed through the cost of financing minus the convenience yield net of storage cost. So my little y is the benefit minus the cost of storage. So this is in proportional representation. In continuous time, we have this expression. So today, at date little t, in principle, my relationship is absolutely correct. I look at little r, the cost of financing for this well-defined time period. I have a given little y, and I have a given st. So, and then you are going to put the dynamics on your forward curve later on. Okay, so let me pass on coal, which is one of my favorite commodities, the one where I put my own money. Not that it so looks so good, but still, coal is diamond, which did not make it to the status of diamond, and which is fundamental both in electricity production still today and in production of steel, which is crucial as well. And coal is a key part of electricity in many major countries called US, Australia, China, India, and so on and so forth. And it has been increasing more than natural gas and coal and oil over the last period. Okay, so I am going to pass on that as well for the sake of time. But in any case, One point I want to make again. I say that if I have a book of positions in forward contracts and options, financial and physical options, related to a bunch of energy commodities, I said before that I can make the case that I want to use my barrel of oil as my numeraire in order to analyze my pricing and hedging issues. Okay, that's one message in which I believe. The other message is the following. Electricity is a very weird commodity because it's not storable, so it's not obvious for anyone to step into the electricity market. So banks have understood that. Morgan Stanley and the others have bought power plants, Société Générale, and so on. But my point is different. I am saying that even though you do not want to trade electricity, you need to know that electricity is a key piece of our existence. We walk into this room and we take for granted the fact that we have light in the ceiling and electricity in this computer. So we want to check what's going on in the electricity market at all time, because it's going to have an impact on the other energy commodities. Okay, so coal appears here in what we call baseload, in the supply curve of electricity, or semi-baseload. So if you are in Canada here, you will have plenty of hydro, obviously, which is a cheap and nice way of producing electricity. So we are seeing here that we are going to find the same type of behavior, an amazing rise in prices and a steep decline. However, coal, for a number of reasons, is less volatile than crude oil or natural gas. And as you see, in May 08, which was not yet the point which was the maximal values for crude oil and coal, the market was already anticipating that coal prices were going to decline. The forward curve was declining, except for the little piece. And in fact, the forward curve was a pretty good predictor at that point in time of what happened in the coal market. Okay, crude oil is the fundamental commodity. Everybody's looking at it, and you people in Canada in particular, because the tar sands may become variable or not. They are pretty bad for the environment in any case. Okay, so we don't have a gigantic amount of time left as far as standard crude oil is concerned, and we have politically sensitive countries which own the largest reserves, namely Saudi Arabia, Iran, and Iran, okay, where any political change may have a major impact. So I was mentioning before the correlation between commodities. As you may recall, when we got the hurricane during summer 2005, BP in particular had oil platforms destroyed in the Gulf of Mexico, and we turned to natural gas in order to have the energy we needed. And this was the time when the Amarant trader was making millions that he lost in the form of billions the year after. So, again, we need to remember that we have crude oil and we have crude oil products, and for each of them, we have different information on the current inventory. And you need to look at the inventory of the specific commodity you are looking at. In particular, during the month of January, we had a gigantic move in gasoline futures contracts at the point where the exchange had to stop the trading, which does not happen very often, because suddenly we got the news arrival of lower than expected inventories. So basically, if you want to do some kind of market timing, certainly do you want to keep some time and efforts on this inventory. Okay, so let me turn to the forward curve, and which is this fundamental object. And people in mathematics do not pay attention to forward contracts. They think they are ridiculous, and they are wrong, because they are much more subtle than options. And that's where we trade commodities, and that's where we have been trading commodities for 150 years. Okay, so I look at the collection of my forward prices at date little t for the different maturities, capital T. Okay. And I, as you probably know, sometimes the spot price of a commodity, soybean today, for instance, may not be so easy to observe, and the forward curve may be easier to observe. Okay, and we said before that because of the carry relationship, the shape of the forward curve is going to be related to the difference between little r and little y, r minus y. So, in the oil market, there is essentially no seasonality. Oil travels easily and at a low cost today. So consequently, when it's winter somewhere, it's summer somewhere else. So basically, you don't need to bother about introducing seasonality in your model for oil. If you do natural gas, the story is completely different. You make money by trading the calendar spread, winter, summer, March, April, and so on. Okay, so in any case, we've got a number of authors who highlighted the importance of this convenience yield. Gabillon had a PhD in economics on oil and oil forward curves and showed the importance of this convenience yield. He started in the oil industry. He's currently head of commodities in London for Goldman Sachs. So basically, in commodities, you need to start with the physical properties of the commodities before going to derivatives, structured products, and so on. Because we have so many optionalities all over the place that we first need to understand how the industry is functioning. So this is my WTI prices, this remarkable increasing trajectory, which looks like a perfect geometric Brownian motion. And on this slide, which is important to me, I return to the Gabillon analysis, which would say that essentially the shape of the oil forward curve is decreasing. In fact, I had lunch with some investors today, and the issue of the forward curve is crucial in many cases. You want to be long crude oil WTI. So you buy the first nearby. Okay, that's easy. You don't need to put the oil in this room, which would be fairly inconvenient. So you are holding in the first nearby, the best proxy for the spot price of oil. The bad news, however, is that this future contract is going to expire, hence you need to roll your position. So you go to the next one. In the case of a forward curve which is declining, you see that everything is good news. In particular, when you roll your position, you will be generating an extra piece, which is the roll yield. So consequently, we like to have this kind of a shape when we are investing in commodities. So on this slide, I do a very simple elementary exercise. I take a database of 10 years of forward curves, and I build the difference, the 29-month futures minus the first nearby. And I observe, like many others who made the statement before, that most of the time it is backwardated, which is, as I said, the shape which I like in particular in my activities of investing in commodities. Not only that, but when the spread is positive, we are here or there or there, I recognize some crisis. Here we are after September 11. Here we are at the time of the Asian crisis, and this was the most recent time period when I built my spread in December 05. So message number one, my oil forward curve is mostly backwardated. Message number two, when it is not, it often coincides with a crisis. Okay, and that's what we have. So now we keep going in the analysis, and here I am sitting in a major bank which is trading commodities. I have two phones, buyers and sellers, and I'm able to build my forward curve, bid and ask, buyers and sellers. So first observation, going 8 years down the road, my bid ask is tiny. I have a gigantic liquidity. I trust my forward curve. First message. Second message, we are in March 06. We've got all these new players in the world of oil, and now my forward curve is not uniquely backward dated, is not uniquely in contango. It starts being in contango, then at some point it starts to return to the classical shape. So you may say, and you may be right, that this accounts for all the new entrants, the hedge funds, all the private equity, everyone who wanted to be in commodities and in crude oil. And then at some point, these guys get scared. It goes 12 months down the road, 13 months down the road, and they say, no, now this belongs to the oil industry. I don't know what I'm doing. I come out, and my forward curve returns to its classical form. But as we know from interest rates, from any market, what we need to incorporate as far as our modeling is concerned is a model which at least, at the very least, is able to generate curves that were observed in the past. You may obviously want to create new possibilities, but at the very least, should you be able to create what was observed. Okay, so the world is more complicated, and the unique little y is not going to do the job. R minus y cannot be positive and negative at the same time. And my cost of financing, little r, is well defined. At date today, little t, I have a well-defined cost of financing. So, returning to this curve that I build every day, in September 07, after the start of the subprime crisis, maybe related, maybe not, the backwardation shape appeared to prevail again. And now we are many months into the collapse of oil prices, and that's what we have. We have a steep contango. So when you show this kind of a curve to people who have not been in commodities or have been just looking at them recently, you say, okay, I have an arbitrage opportunity. I sell at this point, I buy today, and I can nicely cover my cost of financing and cost of storage and pocket the difference. So go and do it. You need to find the storage facility, whether you take a vessel or you take a classical storage facility, and you need to make sure that whoever you sold your forward contract to is going to be around at maturity. Nothing happens today. At this point, you have the oil, you deliver and receive the money. So that's what we have, and I did not incorporate the one I built last week, but we have the same steep contango. So we have been for a long time into this contango shape, which in the world of economic theory around commodities is not normal backwardation. Paul Samuelson introduced the expression of normal backwardation for commodities, meaning that if today prices are high, new production is going to come online and prices will go down and revert to a lower value. So it's not what is happening at the present time, and you may decide whether this is indeed an arbitrage opportunity or not. Okay, so that's the behavior I mentioned many times before. Okay, so these are the most recent periods. So in any case, returning to my one of my goals is to propose. So first, if I may, I just want to say one or two things, because there are certainly beautiful mathematicians in the room. So I want to say two things at the very least. I want to say that if I do commodities, I do want to worry about the dynamics of my spot price process, decide whether I should include jumps or not, and regarding the diffusion part, whether I want to have mean reversion as opposed to a geometric Brownian motion. Secondly, my key instrument is my forward curve. My forward curve is the collection of my forward contracts, in principle for all maturities, but certainly for a large number of them, for more and more commodities. So I have this infinite number of points, which is going to be evolving randomly over time. So you understand that from a mathematical standpoint, this is a very complicated problem, exactly like the one we had in the world of interest rates, when you have an infinite dimensional system evolving randomly over time, and you add on top the no arbitrage assumption, you find an exercise which is not too easy. And in fact, a number of authors have taken models written for interest rates and have just deleted interest rates and put commodities, but that's not the way to go because commodities have their own specificities which need to be addressed. So in terms of modeling, we have plenty of modeling, and we need to decide for ourselves what kind of simple representation. How many factors, whether you do PCA analysis or something else, how many factors should you incorporate, and what kind of dynamics are you going to put on these factors? Okay, so in any case, what I want to say is that up to the end of 2005, essentially when you read whatever papers were written, you had a convenience yield little y, which was first introduced, like in economic theory, in a more or less constant manner, and which became stochastic in a second stage, which is fine. And you can decide, you choose an Ohlstein-Uhlenbeck process or something of this nature. But I say that on this picture, I cannot go for a unique stochastic convenience yield at one date little t, a unique little y does not make the job. So consequently, I need to go further, and I need to propose what I do here, namely theory of storage revisited. So theory of storage, Keynes was the first one, Kaldor and a number of Nobel Prize winners in economics introduced the theory of storage, and in particular the little y to explain the forward curve. Now, I say that given the shape, I need many convenience yields. And I say that as long as I have more than one, I should, like in my life in interest rate, where I had a term structure of volatilities, stochastic or non-stochastic, I should have here a term structure of convenience yields with different convenience yields for different maturity. Okay, so I had two papers with this co-author. She works for an energy company. And we said in particular that in the case of seasonal commodities, you cannot escape because you want to emphasize that January is different from July if you look at the natural gas market in Canada. Okay, so we have a possibility of introducing a family of convenience yields. And that's what I was saying before. If you go do the gas market, basically seasonality is where you are going to be extracting your profits, essentially, plus other subtle elements. But that's where you want to be focusing this remarkable seasonality that appears on the graph of the forward curve. Okay. Later on, we decided that covering a bunch of energy commodities, some of them being non-seasonal, others being seasonal, and all of them evolving randomly over time, we wanted to recognize the seasonal and stochastic features. So we decided that we were going to forget about S as the first state variable. The spot price, not easy to observe, likely to be manipulated by the big player. Okay, so we say, okay, we forget about S, and we say this forward curve, which is crucial, we introduce F bar, sorry, it got displaced, F bar, the average value of the outstanding forward contract. So that's my first state variable. Then I have a family of seasonal premia that you may decide to be deterministic or stochastic. And then we have stochastic forward premia in order to extend the cost of carry relationship as we have in the world of commodities and currencies. So basically, that's what we propose here. So we have log of F bar, which is defined this way. F bar is, in fact, my geometric average. And then these are my seasonal premia, and this is my stochastic cost of carry. Okay, so this is exactly the model we propose, and then we need, assuming that these guys are deterministic, we need to propose some dynamics here and there. And so that's what we proposed. We took for log of F bar an Ornstein-Uhlenbeck process, which is fine since F bar is going to be the exponential of this quantity. And this is the family of this gamma quantity that we calibrate to a number of energy markets, and I guess I'm reaching the end of my time. So first we extract the seasonal premium, and as we do here, and since F bar is the average, my premium is negative during summer and positive during winter, and this is the end of the year, the last quarter. Same thing for natural gas. The previous one was gas oil, this is natural gas. And then I look at my quantities called gamma, and I look at the term structure of the stochastic forward premia in terms of their volatilities. And we say it is not true anymore that forward curves have to be backwardated, but we say that interestingly we recover this property of backwardation in the term structure of the volatilities of the stochastic forward premia. This is for gas oil, this is for natural gas in the UK, we have the same kind of pictures for the US. And, okay, and how many minutes do I have, Tom? Like zero?
Well,
like
four minutes.
Okay, so that's one proposal we have, and then I will use the remaining of my time to say, possibility number one, you want to keep the message of the convenience yield and you need to go for some more complex representation, not only a random evolution of the convenience yield, but a family of convenience yield. Second possibility, and again, this comes to my inventory story. We know that when inventory is low, on one hand, the convenience yield will be high because the benefit of owning the physical commodity in my hand will be higher. At the same time, when inventory is low, the spot price volatility is high. As has been documented, I have myself a number of papers with PhD students on different commodities, soybeans, and so on, documenting this remarkable relationship, which allows you to have a better representation of this key quantity called volatility. So in any case, what I am proposing on this slide is to say, either you go for a family of little y at date little t, which is today, in order to account for the hump in the forward curve, or you decide to forget about them, and eventually you want certainly to have in your picture the spot price volatility. And this will be my last slide. In this case, in order to have a parsimonious model to represent oil price dynamics to price options, and at the same time calibrate my forward curve, I may decide to return to the spot price as my first state variable, to take as an alternative to the convenience yield, the message is not identical, it is correlated, the spot price volatility, this is the Heston model that many people in this room have recognized, and here what I am proposing, but you may decide otherwise, so my volatility is stochastic, and my spot price is mean reverting to a long-term value, capital L, that I propose to represent as a geometric Brownian motion. Peak oil is probably behind us, and consequently, the long-term price of oil should be increasing. The long-term price, obviously, not being the price when oil is gone. The long-term price being like 5 to 7 years down the road. And there is a very nice paper by Pindick with an economist at MIT in the Department of Energy, where basically he does not speak my language, but basically the proposal of the features he exhibited in a 100 years database of energy commodities. He analyzed led him to conclusions which are more or less similar to what I have on this slide. And I'm going to stop here in order for the drinks to take place and the other talk to take place as well in due time. Thank you. Okay, so basically in this model, what we proposed in the first stage was to have F bar as a first state variable, then a family of gamma of little t.
Not gamma, but gamma.